to be cast out into the eternal hellfire and damnation, the great shades of darkness. That's a great tune. Hear the rest of the lyrics. Gee whiz. Wow. How about the... Here's somebody suggested the name of a new rock group, in case you're curious. Little Adolf and the Warsaw Pact. Can you change? I'm sorry. Well, what are you going to do, you know? Oh, for heaven's sakes, look at this. Here's from a German medical journal. Heavy smoking causes impotence. Famous European. Well, I just thought you ought to know about that one. It's going to make a lot of guys swear off. Quicker than that. Yes, sir. Hey, how about this for a piece of camp? Isn't that beautiful? You know what that is? That's a 1927 Fuller Brush letter opener. And see, there's a Fuller Brush man, and he's wearing one of those big wide hats, you know, the kind that Edward G. Robinson always wore when he was hitting Jimmy Cagney in the mouth, you know. And, I just shouldn't keep this around because it reminds me of a terrible traumatic experience I one time had. Not with a Fuller Brush man, but does anybody remember a radio show, or did I invent it in my mind, a radio show about a guy who was a door-to-door salesman, the hero? And he would go, that would be the opening of the show. He's knocking on the door. He'd go, there's nobody home. I hope. Do you remember that? Who was that? We will award a brass figgy with bronze oak leaf palm if you can tell me the name of that radio performer. It was a great opening. He would come on absolutely cold. There was no theme song, saying there would be dead silence. You know, it would go boom, boom, boom. Then silence. Then you'd hear, nobody home. I hope. And now would come the theme song. Who was that? Please, bring it up there, Big Matt. Got to warm up here a little bit, just a minute. It's Friday, you know. Hold it, thank you. Reset that, please.
If you will.
Who was that? Well, I want to... You don't know. Okay, fine. You know, one of the most embarrassing things, I'll tell you, this is the time of the year. I'm going to have to bore you tonight. I'm going to have to tell you a story that happened to me once when I was a kid. It was a terrible thing. And somebody sent me this beautiful Fuller Brush letter opener, and I opened this letter up, and this thing fell out, and I said, oh, no, my God, no. It's the free gift. You know how they always used to say, you know, the Fuller Brush man comes around, he has a gift for you? Well, this is the free gift, see? Well, when I'm a kid, see, in beautiful summer, soft springtime, and about every 20 minutes, there would be a knock on the door, you know? And a very solid knock. My mother would always say, it's another peddler. Shh, now be quiet. Be quiet. But then we're not home. Shh. And we would hide under the table. And these guys would stand out in front and knock on the door and say, and they'd look in, you know. A lot of them would even have so much brash, you know, they'd look in around the curtains to see if anybody was hiding out. And like, come on out, I want to show you this stuff. Knock on the door, and we're hiding. See, my mother used to say, don't ever let a peddler in. Of course, little did I realize that this was the prelude of a whole anti-commercial attitude, which was going to sweep the world in a few short years. Never let a peddler in. In fact, I wonder how many people, right at this minute, the instant that Ed McMahon gets up, you know, says, well, Johnny, of course, I'd be glad to tell him about Whoopi dog food. The minute he starts that, they jump up and run into the John. Well, Yeah. You know, I wonder whether or not guys like McMahon consider themselves peddlers. I mean, in the door-to-door sense. But one thing, I'm a kid, I'm at home, you know, and most kids don't. They figure that their old lady doesn't know anything anyway, you know. And I'm walking around the house, beautiful Saturday afternoon. Oh, man, the sun is beaming down. And I'm in the house all by myself. You know that itchy feeling when you get in the house all by yourself and there's stuff there to look at and that you're not supposed to be looking at? And I'm walking around, and all of a sudden, I hear this knock at the door, see? The front door. Well, I instantly go to ground, which I have been trained to do. Look out for the pedal, you know, the peddler. And I sneak around the edge of the wall where I can look out through the living room and see the front door, which had a big glass pane, you know, big glass pane with a curtain in it, see? And I see this shadowy shape out there with a great big, you know, fantastically big, he had an enormous case, actually, with handles on it, see? Knocks again, he looks in, and I'm peeking, I'm laying flat on the ground, see, peeking around the edge of the wall. And I see him walk across the front porch and down the steps. He is now gone. I get up. I figure, I've been good, see? I haven't let the peddler in. And I start walking around the kitchen making a salami sandwich, when all of a sudden, on the back door, and he's looking right in at me. See, he sees me in there, and I got a salami sandwich. Son of a gun, it's coming around the back, see? And he's looking in the back door, and he's got this great big grin. You know who he looked like? Jack Carson. Do you remember the movie actor Jack Carson? Great big moon face, see? And he says, "Hello, kid!" Knocks on the door. "Hey, is your mother home?" Oh, gee. Well, I go to the back door, and I open it up a little bit, and he says, "Hello, son, is your mother home?" Had this fantastic big smile. Oh, man, little did I realize I was about to be shucked, you know. He says, "Hello, son, is your mother home? I have a special gift for her." I said, "No, she's not here." I start to close. "Well, I have a gift for you. I have a gift for you." Well, I mean, you know, everybody's got his price, see, so. I says, "Yeah?" He says, "Why, of course, here." He says, "I'm not here to sell you anything. I have a gift for you. From the Perpetual Wear Aluminum Corporation of America." And he opens up his case. He reaches in. And he takes out one of these things. Have you... You know these things that has a kind of a circular disc on the top of it? And you press a button on the bottom and the disc starts spinning and makes sparks? Well, this thing would spin. See, you push it and sparks would fly. But at the same time, it would spell out Perpetual Wear Aluminum on this thing as you spin it. See, it was like a stroboscopic wheel. See? So he holds it in front of my face. Jeez, when I realize how I got euchred, you know, it still embarrasses me. He holds it right in front of my face and goes, ch-ch-ch-ch-ch. He presses his thing, the sparks are flying. He says, "Here, sonny, here, this is for you. I bought this especially for you. Here, sonny." And he sticks his foot in the door. He hands me this thing. And he says, "And now, while we're about it, I'd like to set up a little display for when your mother gets home. I'm sure she'll enjoy seeing this. Actually, she's been waiting to see these magnificent new Perpetual Wear aluminum cookwares." And he pushes the door open. And, of course, I'm playing with this little thing. It's going around and around. Little did I realize I'm being bribed. See, I'm playing with this thing. In comes this guy, and he's got this big leather case, and on the side it says Perpetual Wear Aluminum Corporation, and he's got the big handles. He runs into the living room, he slams this thing open, and he starts setting this stuff up. It all happened so quick, I didn't know what was going on. He has little racks that he takes out of this thing that unfold, you know, like little unfolding metal racks. He unfolds these things, and each rack had a hook on it, and he puts a pot on it. He unfolds another one, he puts a pot on it. And in about 5 minutes, this place looked like, I'll tell you, it looked like the appliance section of Woolworth's department store. You know, he had pots and pans. He had brushes. This guy had the, you know, he had football cleaners. He had about 5,000 different things all hanging up and all spread over one end of the room. Now, it was fantastic. It covered about 15 feet like that. He had all this, and it all came out of the case. And he says, "Now, son, and now you say that your mother is out. Where may I ask, where did she go? Is she going to be back shortly?" Well, I should have said no. You know, she's visiting my Aunt Gwen in Pittsburgh and won't be back until next New Year's, you know, something like that. Well, yeah, she just went down to the A&P. She'll be back in a couple of minutes. Oh, gee, how dumb. Well, certainly glad. He says, now, would you please show me where she keeps her... Let's see, yes, I'll need some little sugar here. And would you show me where she keeps the salt? Well, it's in the cupboard. He opens the cupboard instantly, and he's taking out the sugar and the salt. He's got a pot on the stove, and he's starting to cook something. He puts water in there, and he's got it all cooking. The smoke is coming out. He's, well, this is going to be fun. What do you think I'm making for you, Sonny? Hi, George, using this new unbelievable perpetual wear aluminum cookware. It'll cook in just half the time. Here, I'll show you how it goes. And I'm watching. I'm playing with the thing. The little wheel is going around. The sparks are flying. And I am completely, you know, completely engrossed in this. This guy is such a tremendous force. He comes in the house like a tornado, see? Well, in the middle of his cooking, and he's saying, isn't this a beautiful? Now, I want to show you. Here, I have another little gift for you. And he reaches into his case, and he brings out a balloon. It is a silver. Have you ever seen a silver balloon? A silver balloon. I'll tell you, he had a silver aluminum-colored balloon, a rubber balloon, which when you blew it up, had black letters on the side that says Perpetual Wear Aluminum Corporation, you know, had a picture of a pot on the thing. So he says, here's a beautiful balloon. He blows it up. He says, here, Sonny, I'm sure that you'll... Of course, what he was doing, he realized that if he kept handing me gifts, I would not realize what's happening. That every new gift would, you know, you got a kid's got an attention span of about 8 milliseconds. See? So he hands me this balloon. I'm blowing up the balloon. I got this thing spinning. Now the sparks are going all over the place. And then I hear something coming up the back steps. And he brightens up. It's, well, I do believe it must be your mother. The door opens. In comes my kid brother with his nose running. He takes one look. He sees all those pots and pans and all that stuff. And he says, Mama, shut up, will you? Hey, here, Sonny. Well, I have a gift for you. And he gives him one of these things with the handles on the bottom with the spinning disc. My kid brother, who's about 5, you know, instantly falls for it. He goes, sparks are going. We're running around. We're happy. And then it happened. Up the back steps comes my mother with 5 shopping bags full of stuff. She slams the door open. And there she sees what's happened. This whole living room is filled with pots and pans. Jack Carson is standing there in the middle of it all wearing a straw hat and a bow tie. And by the way, my old man always said, be careful of guys that wear bow ties. He says, a guy that wears a bow tie or and has a mustache is a dangerous man. He says, and if he has both, look out. This guy was clean-shaven. He was as clean-shaven as a baby's... Well, you know, he had this big grin, his teeth are shining. My mother walks into the kitchen. He says, well, we've been waiting for you. Hello there. What did you say your name was? Mrs. Shepherd. Why, I'm certainly delighted to see you. Come right into the living room. I have a surprise for you. And we got a little surprise for you.
We weren't able to use the gutter you had there, so that cost you $73 extra. Then I got to charge you $870 for the partition your wife wanted, and $490 to tear it down after she changed her mind. 7 additional outlets, $350. The doorknob you chose was a special order. That cost 47 clams. I had to repaint the rear wall. Your wife didn't like the color. $241. Bathroom fixtures cost $3,450 instead of the $42 we budgeted. The plumber's bill was $1,675.
Don't begin a repair job on your home before you understand all the costs involved. The Department of Housing and Urban Development has a booklet entitled Fixing Up Your Home. For a free copy, write to HUD, Washington, D.C., 20410, or call your local FHA-approved lender.
Cash advances to subcontractors, so the total comes to about $83,000. Mr. Smith, are you all right? Mr. Smith?
What do you do when the music stops? Where are you then? Where are you then? When you drop full-blown on all the mountaintops? Where are you then, my friend? What do you see when your pupils contract? When you're out in the alley after your act? And you're not quite home. then, my friend. You may think drugs are the answer to all the things you may think are wrong with the world. But with that answer, nothing changes, except you. And if too many of you choose that answer, where are we then, my friend? Where are we then?
The preceding was brought to you by the National Institute of Mental Health.
Year one.
At this very moment, a mysterious psychic spell is being placed on you. You will go to your mailbox very shortly, and you will place in the mail a check for $2. Addressed to Year 1. 460 West 34th Street. New York. And shortly thereafter, you will own the magnificent Year 1 poster, and your entire life will flash before your eyes.
This is WOR, speaking of door-to-door raggle-taggle salesmen in New York, and...
Hi, this is John Wingate. I would love to have all you WOR listeners stay right along with me each weekday afternoon on Radio New York from 3:15 to 6 here on WOR 710. We got music, good, lively, bright music, news, stocks, transit, helicopter 710 and George Meade to get you home, if you can get home, during the evening rush hour. Interviews with some of the most improbable human beings in the world. It's right here, 3:15 to 6 on WOR 710, weekday afternoons.
This is Mayor Lindsay shouting to you from Times Square. If you're having a problem hearing me, that's the problem. Ear pollution. 150 decibels of noise is enough to drive a man insane. And in Midtown New York, it's already at 77. Noise is our fault if we use steel garbage cans instead of plastic. And noise is our fault if we flare our radios or don't complain when somebody else flares theirs. I'm sorry if you're having a problem hearing me. Noise is our fault if we blow our car horns. Besides, that's against the law unless it's a matter of life or death. Just listen to the horn. It's a pain in the ear. If we don't cut down on all this racket, we're going to drive ourselves nuts.
You know, speaking, I saw Cavett the other night, and Cavett was talking about going to a bachelor, pre-marriage party, you know, these bachelor parties they have. And he said he only went to one. And I must admit, I only went to one. You remember, you were there too, Matt. The only one I ever went to. That was it, you know. And I want to tell you, it was every bit as sordid as I had been led to believe that bachelor parties would be. And it was held in this seedy hotel over on the West Side, which is, a great place to get a marriage off. And I was invited to this. Everybody went over there, it was a wild moment when it began. See, everybody stood around for a while, didn't know quite what to do. They had all this great food and everything, and the bachelor came in, the guy that was going to get married, and we all sort of stood around first on one foot and then the other, and well, you're going to get married, Joe. Wow, by gosh. Hi, George. What do you say, you know? Hi, George. That's about all you can say to a guy who's going to get married. See, it's kind of a form of madness, you know, getting married in the 20th century. But nevertheless, guys do it. See, so after a while, you say things like, she's, who are you marrying? No kidding. Oh, hi, George. Yes, sir. Getting married, eh? Hi, George. How about a drink here? Let's all toast the groom. What do you say, gang? Hi, George. Well, anyway, this went on, and we started to eat, and everybody's sitting around, when all of a sudden, in the door came the stripper. A real live stripper. And I'm telling you, she was a stripper. I mean, a real one. And she stripped, too. And so what happened? Everybody sitting there, and a lot of the guys who were in this bachelor party were very distinguished types. That's one of the things that confused me. You know, the gray hair type, the guy with the solid iron colored suit, the guy with the Oxford gray jockey shorts all of his life. He's been very, very circumspect. Pillar of the church and all that stuff. Well, here he's sitting in there. All of us. It was a bunch of it must have been 50 people, wouldn't you say, Matt? Roughly about 50. And, they ranged all the way from the totally decadent to the completely official. I mean, there they all were in this seedy West Side hotel, and in comes this girl. I mean, she's all dressed with the long black beaded thing with the feathers all over the top of the head, see? And I must say this for her. She carried it off with great style, didn't she? She had great aplomb. First of all, she didn't have her usual trio, which obviously she worked with. Now, a stripper usually works with these guys, with the tamba, dum da da dum da da dum, and somebody singing over in the corner. Oh, every stripper I've ever seen comes along with a guy in a tuxedo who over at the side of the stage is singing, "A pretty girl is like a melody," and she walks around and drops her gloves. Well, she just came into this room, and with the lights full on, see, and she starts to walk around, and she's throwing her clothes off, and all the guys are sitting there leaning forward, their eyeballs bugging out. And I must say this, I don't think it's ever been reported that the most consistent feeling at a bachelor party is one of continual embarrassment. You agree, Matt? It's a strange feeling, especially to see these distinguished-looking guys with their gray hair and their Oxford suits and all, leaning forward and digging it, see? Drinking it, drinking down the bourbon and leaning forward. All of a sudden, you see it's all starting to come off, this facade of civilization. This chick is walking around. She says, "Hello, boys, how are things going?" "Well, it's great to see all of you here. Who's getting married?" "Oh, here he is, right here." And she sits down on the bride's, the bridegroom's lap, He's looking real embarrassed. His face is red. She says, "Hello there, baby. Oh, you're going to want to know about all this stuff when you get married." "Oh, wow." And he's looking real embarrassing. Well, then finally, they had this routine. Now, I don't know whether I should be telling you all this stuff on here, but sex and life is all going together. They had this routine where she's got a couple of things off, like she's got her hat off and her gloves off and so on. And every person has to come up and take off another item of her clothing, see? But, you can't get out of it. They pull you right out, see? So she'd say, "All right, now how about you?" And the guy would come up and she is right in the middle of the floor, and you'd have to sort of sit down in his chair. See, she dances around you. Dun, 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 dun. She's dancing. Well, you're supposed to reach out. You take off a little feather or something like that, see? And so, the whole act was based on this premise. Well, finally, they drag me out of the crowd. See, and there I am. See, this kind of stuff always vaguely embarrasses me. Don't you think I handled it pretty good, Matt? I mean, Well, everybody did, actually. There were no fights. Nobody jumped out of the window or ran down the hall hollering fire or anything like that. So I'm sitting there at the chair, and this chick is walking around. And she is a wild-looking chick. I mean, you can just see this bimbo has seen everything, man. And, and she had a look of humor in her eye. That's what was so great about her. So she's walking around, dung, 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 around me, see? And all the other guys, there's about 500 guys now all gathered in. And the waiters are looking in. That was another thing that bugged me. The waiters are starting to assemble, see? And this is in this room. It's in a hotel room. And all these guys are sitting in a big U all around me, saying, I'm on the chair, and this chick is going, dum, da, da, dum, da, da, dum, da, dum, da, da, dum. And the guys are, "Hey, chef, come on, let's go, man. Wow, wow, wow. Hey, wow, wow." And I'm feeling more and more embarrassed. And all of a sudden, the girl was sweeping around me, see, she whispers something in my ear. She says, "Hey, that was a fantastic thing you did the other night about that traveling salesman. That was a wonderful bit. That was beautiful. What fantastic irony." She's a listener. The stripper is a listener. And she has that look in the eye of somebody who not only, what she was doing, she did with great humor. You agree, Matt? Tremendous style, great humor. And she sweeps around. She says, "Hey, that was a fantastic bit." I says, "A listener?" And she goes around again. Dung, da, da, dung. She's doing the bumps and the grinds. She comes in front of me again. She says, "Excelsior, baby." Dung, da, da, dung, da, da, dung. Believe it. It was a listener. And, she's working her trade over there on the West Side. So I says, okay, baby. And I takes one of these little feathers off. She says, wonderful, wonderful. Let's give him a big hand. Let's give him a great big hand, baby. Let's give him a big hand. She's moving back and forth. And all the guys are leaning forward. I can see those eyeballs plugging out. And she's kind of baiting him. You know? She's just giving him the old thing there. Man, I'll tell you. So if you're listening tonight, what was her name? Oh, it doesn't matter. If you're listening tonight, baby, you know who you are. There's no point. Oh, you know, these moments of embarrassment that are rarely recorded. Did you ever see Patty Chayefsky's movie, The Bachelor Party? I had a little elements of that. It sure did, you know. Oh, wow, I'll tell you. Woo. You know, they don't write plays about the real stuff that goes on. I wonder how many people feel in their lives a vague sense of... one of the most consistent feelings that you have in your life is a vague sense of embarrassment. I mean, do you ever feel embarrassed when you see somebody else do something real stupid? I mean, you personally yourself feel embarrassed. Like I went to this great restaurant here not long ago, and, fancy restaurant on the east side, and I'm with a couple of official people. And I see over right to my left this table with these very official-looking people, a guy with gray hair and a lady with sort of silver hair and a couple of younger people, but very, very straight, you know. These really official people. And I don't know what happened. In the middle of their meal, and we're sitting there having this nice meal, the candles and the waiters are coming back and forth, all of a sudden, the old guy with the silver hair, apparently he was allergic to bourbon. I don't know what it was. He starts to go, and he is a little bag, see, and he starts to tell this dirty story. I mean, a really dirty story. And you could hear it. It's bouncing off the walls. It's an on-team-type restaurant, see. And he's like, oh, I'll tell you, oh, this is a funny story. Oh, wow, funny story. You seen his bartender? Yes, oh, my God. This bartender over on the Third Avenue there, he's standing by the bar, and in comes this priest. The priest comes up. Well, I knew the story. I heard the story before. And this is the story, the kind of story that is so stinky, so rotten. It's so covered with moss and crud that you're embarrassed to even think about it. You know, there's some stories, dirty stories, that are funny. Then there are some dirty stories that are dirty. That's just dirty. And he is telling the worst. And I have found out, in my experience, that the smaller the sense of humor a guy is blessed with, the more he tells really rotten, because they confuse sex with humor, you know. The rottener the story, the less humor the guy's got. See, so he said, and this guy comes in, see, and he walks into the priest. The guy says, hey, I'll have a bourbon. And the bartender says, bourbon? Is that a dachshund you're carrying there with you? And the guy says, yeah, and I'll have a bourbon for the dachshund, too, here. Well, I want to tell you, and I could see this waiter. He's getting embarrassed, and he comes walking over, and he whispers something to the younger guys. The younger guy, who was sitting with the older guy, and apparently it was his father or something, he whispers something like, hey, for crying out loud, tell him not to tell that dirty story, see. With that, the waiter walks away, and the young man leans forward, see, and he says something to the old guy. The old guy says, oh, what a funny story, aren't they? What do you say, Cliff? What do you mean I can't tell a story? I'm paying my way here. I'm paying for this meal here. What do you mean? I can't tell a story. I'll tell you, I can tell a story any time. It's a funny story. Oh, I was so embarrassed. Everybody's sitting there. This guy was at least the vice president of the First National Bank of the world, you know, that kind of thing. I'll tell a funny story. And pretty soon three waiters come over and grabbed him by the shoulders, and they sort of marched him out. And the young man is apologizing. Well, I'll tell you, I'm very sorry, but, you know, he's not feeling well. He's not feeling well. Thank you. Listen, I'm not finished with this. You notice how I'm avoiding telling you what happened with the guy with the perpetual wear, fantastic aluminum wear? Oh, gee. Well, my mother. All right, I might as well come right out and tell you the story. It's might as well, you know, just come right out in a minute. Well, anyway, I'm going to tell you. I've just got to come right out and tell you. I don't think I've ever told this story. Because this story is one, it, 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 Maybe it's why I'm a bad commercial announcer. You know, I'm not the kind of guy that can do... You notice how John Gambling, no matter what John is selling, oh, he just exudes not only sincerity, he exudes actual interest. You know, he says, why, say, these triangular-shaped donuts, why, me and Peter Roberts, we... he loves it. Well, ever since this day, I've been a little embarrassed by the whole idea of peddling. You know what my personal concept of hell is? Everybody has a secret concept of what hell is, you know, what it would be like. I don't see flames. I don't see the River Styx. I don't see Charybdis and Charon. I don't see the devil and imps with pitchforks sticking me in behind, you know, with the lava pouring down, you know, the damned souls. Oh, no, I repent. Oh, I repent. Oh. No, no, you know what I see? I see me arriving, see, at before the pearly gates. And St. Peter is standing there, and he looks down, and he says, ah, look who's here. And look who's here. And I look up, see, yeah, that's George, I'm here. Hello, Pete, how are you? I say, I'm trying to ingratiate myself. How are you, Pete? George. And then he turns on his God voice. I see by the record that you have been a profound sinner. I sentence you for all eternity to go down the chute with all the rest of the bad guys and spend all eternity. Zap. Down the chute I go. I'm sliding through a great chute on my back. And now I come zipping out. I look around. It's just an ordinary street. A kind of suburban street with little houses and lawns. With shrubbery. And doors and swings. And a few flowers here and there. There's a blue sky overhead. And then suddenly I hear, coming out of that blue sky, the voice of the boss.
You have been sentenced to spend all eternity moving on your own feet forever from house to house, selling the products of the International Widget Corporation of the Western world. And you will be forced to make a minimum of 7 sales a week, or the punishment will be beyond your comprehension!
I will spend all of my life, all my eternity, forever and ever, going from door to door. And I see down at my feet a leather case. I'm wearing a gray suit. I got a tie on. The leather case says, your widget man is here. Your widget man. The widget man. I gotta make 7 sales. Oh my God, I gotta make 7 sales or else. I mean, no telling what they're gonna do. They can do anything. And I go up to the first house. It's a nice little house. I got my case. I hope there's no one home. Hope. Hello. I'm your widget man, and I'm here to demonstrate the latest models of the Widget Corporation of America. And I've... The door slams in my face.
Well, okay. There's always another house. Where'd that one come from? I walk down the walk, and I turn left, and I go next to the shrubs, and I turn left again. Now I'm standing before a Cape Cod type house. Let's see, smile. That's right, smile. Let's see. Oh, hello, madam. This is your... Your widget man is here. Your widget man is here. Your widget man is here. And I'm here to demonstrate the newest widget. And I'm pleased to tell you that I have a gift for you. And I show you... What a fantastic concept of hell. And all these people had these blank looks on their faces. I am inevitably, eternally, and throughout all of unrecorded time, trying to sell the newest widget. How about that for an idea of hell? Well, it comes from that one day. I'm going to tell you, it has to. I'm in the kitchen. My mother's got this gray look on her face that meant, oh, she's going to kill me when this is all over. And in the living room... Jack Carson, you know, the happy salesman, has set up his tremendous display of perpetual wear aluminum cooking utensils. And he says, Madam, come right with me, and we have a little surprise on the stove. I want to show you just what we can do with our new double boiler, with the automatic super pressure indicator. Now, you'll see it cooking right on the stove there, and I have a little surprise for you and the boys. Now, come right with me, and I'd like to demonstrate, first of all, I would like to demonstrate our number one set. Now, we have various sets that these wonderful aluminumware cooking sets come in. There's the number one set, which, of course, is the set that most people buy. This is the one that includes the turkey cooker. This is the one that includes the quail stuffer. This is the one that includes the olive boiler. This one includes, and look, you'll notice that it comes complete with a set of plastic aluminum cook-type ware spoons and knives and forks, which are always used. Right? And now here's the number two set, and here's the number three, and I'd like to show you these brochures. And he's running around the house, and my mother's just sitting on a couch now. It's about 5:30, 6 o'clock in the evening already. And he is talking and talking and talking. And about every 5 minutes, my mother keeps saying things like, well, I don't know. You see, I've got plenty of cookware. Well, madam, I have taken a look, if you don't mind. I've taken the liberty since your young son, Genie, you say his name is? What a wonderful boy. Your young son has allowed me to take a look at your cupboards. And I must say, madam, that you certainly, while I'm sure that you're an excellent cook, you certainly need a nice, wonderful set. And by the way, only today, and only today, are we running a special on our cookware. 10% off for ladies who prefer to buy the number one set. And by the way, you can pay for it by time. And he's going on and on and on. Then we run into the kitchen, and he takes out of the double boiler, he has made fudge. Well, that's the way to get to the kids. You don't make a pot of beans, you know. So he's made fudge, some kind of special white fondue fudge. And he hands me some fudge. And he hands my brother, oh, you know, blah, blah, blah. And we've got fudge. Up the back steps comes my father, home for supper. The old man. He comes running into the house. Now, my father was the type of guy that the instant he got in the house, he starts taking his clothes off. You know, by the time he would hit the dining room, you know, he's already down to his jockey shorts. He starts taking his shirt off, and he stops. He's got his tie half pulled off. And here's Jack Carson standing. Why, hello, sir. You're Mr. Shepherd. Why, I am certainly pleased. Here, have a little fudge. I have been demonstrating to your wife, Mrs. Shepherd, and what a marvelous woman. She is one of the finest cooks, you know, and I see cooks all over. Do you know that Mrs. Snyder, not only yesterday, Mrs. Snyder, right down the street, said that I must see Mrs. Shepherd. She's one of the finest cooks in this neighborhood, and I can tell that she is a loving mother. Now, I would like to demonstrate to you our number two set of perpetual wear aluminum cook. You don't want to have your wife slaving over old pots and pans. Why, every man, every husband with a spark of
of ambition, with a spark of care and concern for his wife and his children, like to see his... And by the way, are you aware that many old cooking utensils that are in this country today, and I have the facts and figures right here, according to the American Medical Association, that many pots and pans, right here you can see, 7% of the pots and pans that are used in America today are germ-laden. These pots and pans cause death and destruction. You wouldn't want your children to come down with the flu this summer, would you? And there's nothing worse than a case of summer flu. Now, I would like to show you our sanitary line of perpetual wear aluminum cooking utensils. Now, sir, if you'll... Here, have a little... Here, son, have a little more of that fudge. Isn't that wonderful fudge? Now, only with using our new double broiler with the automatic temperature control can you achieve... Notice how light. Notice how ungrainy. You notice there's no grain in that. That's because of our new aluminum cookware. And now, madam... And we sat there, and he cooked supper for us that night. Well, we bought the number 2 set of perpetual wear aluminum cooking utensils. He left about 8:30 out into the darkness with his case, heading off to that horizon in the far distant future. And after it was all over, my mother turned to my father and says, "You know, he was kind of a nice man, wasn't he?" My father didn't say anything, just sat there. There's a long, pregnant pause, and he said, "Who let him in?" My mother said, "Well, he just seemed nice." Then I thought, you know, he reminded me of your Uncle Charles. My poor Uncle Charles, who was forever, through his short but unhappy life, a salesman who never sold a thing. He made Willie Loman, believe me, friends, look as successful as David Susskind. And the old man said, "Yeah, he did kind of remind me of Charles. I hope he does well, you know. You know, he wasn't so bad after all. And we could use a set of cooking utensils after all, cooking in those tin cans. You know, how many times can you cook the beans in a can? And that frying pan that we got at Woolworths 19 years ago is beginning to look a little... It's got holes in the bottom, you know." My mother never told my old man that I left the aluminum salesman in. And you know, to this day, my mother still uses that stuff. It really is perpetual wear. But somewhere in some fantastic Valhalla of door-to-door salesmen, I'm sure, this Jack Carson-type salesman is still going from house to house, from person to person, with his big smile. We'll see you at 5 minutes past 10 tomorrow. You be there. You hear?